Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to open this National Forum of the Bushfires CRC, Are Big Fires Inevitable? In a year such as this, when our forests have once again been ravaged by fire, the chosen topic is highly appropriate. I read with interest the welcome to today's forum, in particular the last paragraph. I fully understand and accept the spirit in which it is meant. But can I also tell you that I fully understand and accept the overwhelming community feeling of being let down by policy and decision makers who either refuse or are unable to correctly call a fire threat and then fail to respond adequately, resulting in loss of life, property and community assets whilst choking the skies with smoke. Whilst today's forum quite rightly is not for attributing blame, the community expects someone to take responsibility. Sure, it's a complex issue, but there are some straightforward practical measures that have been ignored. Analogies are always dangerous, but can I say it's a bit like the road toll. Whilst we have cars on roads, we will have casualties, and whilst we have forests, we will have fires. But thank goodness public policy and decision makers didn't say it's a complex issue and anyone promoting seatbelts was promoting a single issue cause and they of themselves wouldn't prevent casualties from happening. Of course, seatbelts of themselves won't stop every injury or fatality, but they sure have been very helpful in controlling the road toll. Similarly, it is disingenuous for some to argue that fuel reduction is not a panacea. Of course not, but like seatbelts, it sure helps. And a failure to acknowledge this truth is to do our community a great disservice. From the excellent Nairn report to the robust report of the Canberra coroner, where 10 out of 73 recommendations dealt with fuel reduction, to the overwhelming local feedback on my recent tour, I encourage those in charge to take responsibility. Just last week I toured bushfire-affected areas of southeast Australia and saw firsthand the impact of the devastating bushfires that have affected almost 100,000 hectares in the Pilliga in New South Wales and over 1 million hectares in the northeast of Victoria, not to mention that important mainland state known as Tasmania. The intensity of wildfires is of real concern. In the Pilliga and around Mount Beauty Falls Creek, I observed the consequences of some of the more intense fires. Fires that travelled through the crown of the forests and reached temperatures as extreme, by some estimates, at 1200 degrees centigrade, enough to liquefy aluminium and to melt steel road barriers and crack huge boulders in the ACT. But even greater than the scarred landscape and loss of habitat was the human loss and the overwhelming belief, well-founded, might I add, that it need not have happened. From the cypress forest, pine forests of the Pilliga, to the tall alpine ash forests of the northeast of Victoria, I was hearing a consistent message from the local communities. Large areas of previously intensively managed production or multi-use forests have been closed and dedicated to conservation reserves and are no longer being appropriately managed. State governments have adopted a lock-up and forget mentality, no longer managing these forests to the detriment of the conservation values they recognised as so important in the first place. As an aside, I was shown areas that have been harvested continually for the last 100 years or so that have recently been locked up in conservation reserves. The irony being that the conservation values of these areas were clearly maintained despite the harvesting activity in these areas in the past. And now all that remains is scorched earth, black stumps, and devastated, frustrated humans. Now, after a period of poor management, the resultant wildfires have destroyed the values identified as the purpose for conserving the forests. These values are unlikely to return for a very long time. One body of knowledge I encourage all to listen to is that contained in our local communities. In that extensive library exists a body of knowledge developed over the generations through practical experience and local understanding, which in recent years has been ignored. Not surprisingly, this leads to understandable community resentment. Allow me to give you two brief examples. One, which was funny, if it was not so serious, was a local being told by central headquarters that a bulldozer should be used to put in a fire break in a certain area, and a line was drawn on a map, and that was faxed through. But of course, local knowledge, thank goodness, told the bulldozer operator that if he were to follow that line, he'd be going straight over a cliff. Central headquarters had maps. They knew, they told the locals what to do, but that local knowledge saying, well, we can't put one in there because I'd be driving a bulldozer over a cliff, was not recognised and delayed the fire reduction activity. Another example that I was given was a fire that had contained itself after 2 days, and the locals requested, indeed begged, central headquarters to be allowed to aggressively fight this fire during the night when everything was calm and still to put it out. Central headquarters told them, no, there's no need for that. It's all contained. It is no longer a danger. Their local knowledge told them, which they imparted to the central people, but the winds will change, and as soon as it does, it will race up the mountain and will never contain it. Central headquarters knew better. They were not allowed and given access to aggressively fight the fire. And, of course, you know the rest of the story. The winds did pick up. The local knowledge was proven correct. The fire got away. And, of course, those in central headquarters, it wasn't their life at stake. It wasn't their property at stake. It was the locals with local knowledge who were so patronisingly belittled and ignored were the ones left fighting the fire. Can you understand why there is some resentment within the community? In the past decade, the areas of forests in national parks and conservation reserves in Australia has increased from around 11 million hectares to over 22 million hectares, with an equivalent reduction in the area of production or multi-use forests. With this change of tenure comes a change in management approach. As production, multi-use forest, the land was intensively managed. Good access roads were maintained. Forests were harvested in a mosaic pattern, providing a varied age distribution, providing safe havens for firefighters and, might I add, wildlife as well. Fuel loads were managed with regular hazard reduction burns, and there was an on-hand, ready-made firefighting team in the forest workers. However, once dedicated as conservation reserves, the forests have been neglected with minimal to no management. Gates are locked, access denied, tracks left to grow over or wash away. Fuel loads are not monitored and managed, all escalating the fire risks. If our forests and communities are to survive this minimal management for our conservation reserves, then we need to relearn our fire prevention and suppression strategies. The Bushfire CRC has a leading role to play in this area. I'm pleased to see the Bushfire CRC is addressing some of the key concerns I have heard in the last week through their research program. Through research, I hope we will become more aware of fire behaviour and be better placed to managing fire risk and develop fire control strategies to conserve our forests for all uses, recreation, harvesting or conservation, rather than seeing them destroyed by fire. Are big fires inevitable? Are huge road tolls inevitable? Our attitude will determine the answer. I wish you an enjoyable and successful forum. Thank you very much.